Strengthen your immune system with Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C and get 10% off. Quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Hello and welcome to Are You Well? In this week's episode, I'd like to talk about how important it is to see the connection between our body and mind. To be honest, it would be wrong to say the connection between body and mind because body and mind are a continuum. It's only in the Middle Ages that we started to separate the body from mind. I think it's the philosopher Descartes who said the separation of the body and mind, it's a very recent concept because we wanted to understand the body as separate from the mind to explain the functions of the mind as different to the functions of the body. So we found a way of keeping the two separate and then to understand them as two separate entities. But if we go back to the traditions of Ayurveda or even the documentation in ancient textbooks of Ayurveda, which are called the Ayurvedic classics, dating back to 1st century BC, and there have been many classics of Ayurveda, like up to the 16th century AD, and there are about six major classics. All of them deal with understanding the human body, the human mind, human life, our connection with nature, understanding diseases, how to diagnose them, how to manage. In all of them, one common factor is that body and mind are not seen as two separate entities, but as a continuum. When we start to apply this concept of seeing our body and mind as a continuum, we will start to see that we can regulate our everyday lifestyle in a much more harmonious way than when we start to divide our body and mind as two separate entities. So my whole emphasis is that there is no separation between the body and mind. As you know, in modern medicine, we adopted the Cartesian way of thinking. It became increasingly common to see body as separate from the mind. And Ayurveda, as I said, does not see these as two separate entities. Hence, a disturbance such as stress will take both physical and mental expressions. So, if we are able to identify stress, then we will be able to manage stress better, and not only that, we will also be able to see how we can influence our mental stress by making changes to our physical body and the other way around. So the key principles to manage stress are: listen to your body, balance your metabolism, use food as therapy, and develop the practice of drinking water regularly, the importance of moving your body, and also to pay attention to detoxification and rejuvenation. Detoxification and rejuvenation are natural processes in the body, but sometimes we have to encourage these processes when there's been some obstacle for effective detoxification or rejuvenation. And of course, rest and relaxation are equally important. So from the wisdom traditions of Ayurveda as well as yoga, the knowing that we are not separate from each other and that we share a collective consciousness is very important. Many times we will notice that we may not personally be in a situation where we have stresses. Maybe, let's say, our own health is okay, our life is okay, our work is okay. But if the health, life, and the situation that people that we are connected to, maybe our family members, our extended family, our community, or our colleagues, when things are not going well in their lives, we can't but be affected by it because we do carry a connection with people that we are surrounded by, that we are connected to emotionally. And that can have an impact on us. And this knowledge that we are not necessarily just individuals, but we are part of a collective, is essential to understand managing stress. Hence why I can't be stress-free by myself. I would also have to create an environment where people around me, my environment, is also going to be conducive to a stress-free environment. So what Ayurveda says is that when we lose that interconnectedness with our environment, with other people, we lose wisdom. We become vulnerable to stress. And when we are vulnerable to stress, obviously on an individual level, it leads to cravings, and cravings can then become addictions.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
In fact, one of the very well-known yoga teacher who is no more with us from the US, Ram Dass, he says that in order to avoid pain, we do things which give us an immediate rush and we become prisoners of that for the rest of our life. I think whenever we experience stress, we like to escape from it. Therefore, we like to seek pleasure instead of pain, and many times the sources of pleasure that we seek can trap us and keep us in that position, and that can then become an addiction which then does not serve us or which does not actually heal us. So we continue to be in that state of stress all the time. So therefore, in Ayurveda, it is not about whether you're just physically well, whether you're just mentally well, but it is really about happiness. In fact, Ayurveda's approach to happiness is by primarily paying attention to your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, and your spiritual health. Because what Ayurveda looks at is the key source of happiness comes from meaning in life. And when we are unable to find that meaning, no matter how well our body and mind is functioning, we will still have a degree of unwellness, which will push us towards choosing nutrition, lifestyle choices, or even a mindset that will keep us in that state of stress. But then how do we identify stress? Well, Ayurveda again thinks that, you know, our tendency to be affected by stress is dependent on our own individual or unique makeup or body type, which is called constitution. In Ayurveda, we look at three different aspects that can define our constitution, which we usually, not usually, always, is what is determined at the time of our conception. And when we are born, we are already born with this constitution, which in Ayurveda is called Prakriti. Prakriti is a Sanskrit term meaning nature. So it's our nature. Obviously, we can't change our nature and we don't need to change our nature because nature will have created us in a way that we can best adapt to our environment. And in fact, our nature, whether Ayurveda says you have a prakriti or constitution of vata, which is a predominant of air and ether, pitta, which is the predominance of fire and water elements, and kapha, which is the predominance of earth and water elements. These are not elements as in chemistry. These are the classic elements, the five elements: air, water, earth, fire, ether. Ether or space. So if you are of a vata personality, a sense of being physically run down is how stress manifests. Or there can be cynicism in your way of thinking. There can be irritability, or there can be frequent headaches. There can be weight loss despite eating properly, and also sleeplessness or disturbance in sleep. There can be shortness of breath, or there could be some kind of doubt or suspiciousness, and a sense of feeling helpless. So if these characteristics, they predominate your experience of stress, one, that it tells you that you are stressed. Secondly, that probably they are more towards the vata type of stress. So if you are if you have a vata constitution, you could experience stress in this form. Then what if you are of pitta constitution? Then if you're pitta constitution, there could be anger at those making demands. There can be self-criticism for putting up with the demands. Irritability can be an important feature. And exploding easily at seemingly inconsequent things. Gastrointestinal disturbances. And again, doubting or having that sense of suspiciousness. And an increased degree of risk-taking, not knowing when to stop and then to take more risks. These can be the features of stress, and particularly if you have more of a pitta type of stress. Then what about the other, which is kapha? So those who are of kapha constitution, they tend to experience stress, or when they are stressed, they tend to see more negativity. There can be weight gain because when they are stressed, they might not pay attention to their nutrition, so therefore they tend to put on weight. Depression can be a key feature of stress in these individuals, and also a feeling of helplessness. So what Ayurveda says is that if you are able to not only find whether you are stressed, but also to see if it is vata, pitta, kapha dominant, then probably you can address that through your nutrition and lifestyle. But in summary, whether you can identify yourself as whether you have stress which is of vata type, pitta, or kapha type, but if you start to kind of notice any of these signs, I'll go through them. A sense of being physically run down, anger at those making demands, self-criticism for putting up with demands, cynicism, negativity, irritability, exploding easily at seemingly inconsequential things, frequent headaches, gastrointestinal disturbances, weight loss, weight gain, sleeplessness, depression, shortness of breath, suspiciousness, feeling of helplessness, increased degree of risk-taking, all of them indicate that you probably are experiencing stress. So it's important at this point in time to actually pay attention to that and to rectify. But then how does the body overcome stress? Well, body's mechanism to overcome stress is by engaging in behaviors that soothe pain. Because we have to think of stress as a way of body expressing its pain. And of course, the body, when it expresses or experiences pain, it likes to move away from that sensation of pain. So we will get into those practices which we may have seen as relieving stress. Often in many cases, it's food that we might feel like, even if you're on a good diet, you have done it well for a few weeks, something happens in your life, at your work, or in your personal circumstances, and the first thing that gives in is really food. You might just go and start eating lots of sugars, lots of cakes, or lots of junk food, processed food, while you were on a diet which was very clean and pure, which was helping you. But then stress pushes one to choose these unhealthy foods. And therefore, it is important to know our tendencies and also to prevent ourselves from not getting into those practices. Let's also look at, you know, stress, cravings, and addictions from the yogic perspective, or I would say yogic anatomy or yogic physiology, which is not the right word to use, to be honest, because we are trying to compare yogic principles with something which is more reductionist, like anatomy and physiology. I'm fascinated by anatomy and physiology. I've done several cadaver dissections and we studied physiology, which is fascinating. But what I mean is, it's not so helpful to always translate an ancient wisdom tradition like yoga or Ayurveda and then always try and compare it with modern physiology or anatomy or modern science, because the ways of looking at the human body, human life is very different. Of course, there are overlaps, but it's never possible to translate yoga into a modern language. But we can have a modern interpretation of it, which is possible. Hence, when we look at chakras, see in yoga, the desire to indulge in substances, despite the knowledge of their adverse effects, relates to the disturbance in the harmonious energies of the chakras. That's what yogic teachers, they say. For instance, you know, chakras, there are seven, and they have been kind of layered from bottom to top, like the root chakra, which is the first chakra, and this is seen as a region in the area of the coccyx. And then there's the second, which is the sacral chakra. And this is somewhere around the region of the reproductive organs. Like you are basically visualizing the spine and thinking of these as the centers of the chakra. They're not exact locations, but they radiate from there. And then there's the third chakra, which is the solar plexus, which is around belly button. And then there's the fourth chakra, which is heart, or in the region of the heart or the chest. And then there's the fifth chakra, which is in the region of the throat. And the sixth, which is in the region of the eyebrow center, or just, you know, behind the eyebrow center. And then the seventh, which is the crown or top of the head. And these seven chakras or centers, they have been divided into two, the lower chakras and the higher chakras. So the lower chakras are the first, second, and third. And these, they relate to security, desire, willpower, which are the lower chakras. And the higher chakras, from the heart further up to the crown, or the top of the head, compassion, self-expression, ability to see the truth, and higher consciousness. I guess, you know, this is very similar to the to Maslow's law, where, you know, like, there are basic needs among some individuals that are the most important in their life, but then you reach the highest, which is a self-actualization, where your connection to your community, creating an impact, gives you more meaning than just focusing on fulfilling your basic needs. So chakras are very similar. And what yoga says is, your stress is very much also linked to any of the disturbances in these aspects, like security, desire, willpower, compassion, self-expression, ability to see the truth, higher consciousness. So the more we are able to move from the lower chakras to the higher chakras, our stress will become less, because then we move on from our very basic existential needs towards realizing meaning and higher consciousness. Often, you know, even when you are on an antidepressant, which helps, you know, I have been on antidepressants when I was much younger, which was very much necessary for me at the time, and it greatly helped me. But if we, even when you are on antidepressants, and then you start to see that, you know, your mood is improving, your engagement with their life, you know, your interest in exercising or food has improved, it's very important at the same time to seek certain practices which will expand you beyond just your physical and mental needs. For me, at the time that I was doing my internship, I had just finished 5.5 years of my integrated studies in Ayurveda and medical sciences. And it was intense work during internship, and I caught myself falling depressed. And then I had to undergo treatment for depression. But at the same time, I discovered, once my mood started to improve, while I was learning and working in hospitals, which was very, very fulfilling and demanding, I started learning yoga. So I went to a yoga school, and then I started learning what is called yoga nidra, which is a form of wakeful resting, where you scan through your entire body, you pay attention to your breath, you pay attention to your body, you observe how your abdomen, your chest, your throat, it moves with your breath, and then you kind of bore your mind with all these tasks, and then you start to see the space in front of your closed eyes, and then you bring images or various images, like of a rose or of a mountain or of a sunset, and then you let go of that and you make an affirmation. And in this affirmation, you use a positive, simple affirmation, like, I'm perfectly all right, You do it a few times and then you bring your awareness back to your body, back to your mind, and then you stretch and then you sit up. For me, this practice of Yoga Nidra greatly helped find that connection to the higher meaning, find connection to being part of a collective instead of just focusing on me as an individual. And I still use Yoga Nidra in my practice, in my clinic. I use it in cancer treatments or management, I must say, not as a treatment for cancer. Also in fertility, in depression, anxiety. It works wonders. You know, even if not any of these, often what gets affected when we are stressed is our sleep. And insomnia is such a prevalent condition in our society. And even when we don't have anything to stress about, if that becomes a pattern, then we can't sleep. And I always tell my patients that if you don't sleep for about 8 hours a night, then if you do not log it, and if you don't sleep around 65 hours a week, then just be sure that over a period of time, it's going to upset your nervous system, your hormones, your repair, your recovery. And therefore, it's very important not to ignore the amount of sleep our body needs. Often, even if we do very good nutrition and excellent exercising, if our sleep is not good, then there won't be the right hormonal support to shift our body to the right metabolic rate or even to repair. Often, you know, weight loss, for instance, may not happen if one is not sleeping well. So stress and sleep are so closely related. Even in the absence of stress, if insomnia has become a pattern, then that itself contributes to stress on a physical level, also on an emotional level. One starts to lose their ability to focus, concentrate, memory becomes affected. So it's very important initially to recognize stress, not to believe that, you know, everybody has stress and therefore stress is normal. No, stress is not normal. Stress has to be identified and you need to become aware of whether you have any signs of stress. The very fact that when we become aware that we are stressed, already we will do the right things, like looking after our body, maybe doing some stretches, exercising, going for a walk, not trying to have processed foods, not trying to ignore our sleep. We start to listen to our body. This is very important in managing stress. Instead of thinking, oh, is there a supplement or is there a medication that I can immediately take? Of course, supplementation and medications greatly help when necessary. But awareness about your own stress, your own body and mind is equally important. Again, you know, if you come back to Ayurveda, like if we are looking at, you know, do we have any cravings or tendency towards any addiction or addictive behavior, then again we can come back to our own prakriti or our own body type. You know, generally what happens if you have a more of a vata dominant body type or pitta kapha. So if you are a vata predominant body type, then you might have excessive liking to sweet taste like chocolates or even salty taste like chips, or even, you know, stimulating taste like sour taste like alcohol, or, you know, stimulants like coffee, and abnormal interest in exercising, such as obsessed with running long distances, and also such habits as gambling, if not gambling, worrying, excessive worrying, phobias like fears, then excessive partying, and addiction to internet, addiction to video games. So these kind of tendencies, they indicate that, you know, there is a tendency towards addictions, which is usually the next step from stress. As I said, when our body and mind is stressed, it likes to find an escape from that pain, and then kind of tries and chooses something which is going to soothe it. And it's often in the form of these tendency towards addictions, and these are the vata features. But if you are looking at the more pitta kind of tendencies in our response to stress as addictions, it would be more like craving for hot and spicy food, fried food, alcohol. You know, if you initially were like kind of drinking, let's say, a glass of wine with meals, then it becomes half a bottle. And over a period of time, you'll have noticed that it would have become an entire bottle almost every day of the week, not just weekends. And then you'll realize, yeah, you will have taken into drinking a lot more alcohol than what you used to. And interest in extreme sports, like, even to the extent of risking. Obsessive interest in reading or exploring a specific subject too much in depth. And then abnormal drive to achieve, inability to accept failure, and risky behavior, and again, addiction to internet. So these all indicate that the body is trying to live in that stress state. And this is what you can see in somebody with a pitta tendency. And then those who probably have a more kapha prakriti, or kapha body type, their tendency towards cravings and addictions will be in the form of excessive liking for sweets and probably fatty food, excessive indulgence in television. You know, like sometimes you feel like you watch a series, several episodes after episodes, and you just don't stop at series one. You go up to series six, and you have ignored all your other responsibilities in life, becoming totally addicted to this. That would also indicate a kind of stress response, and particularly in kapha individuals, and also craving for carbohydrates, then excessive interest in food, coffee, and excessive liking to rest, like always wanting to sleep in, even in summer like this, where sun rises so early and it can be quite beautiful outside, sunshine, warm weather, but still feeling like, yeah, I need to be under the duvet and I don't want to get up even at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. That means there is that kind of kapha type addictive behavior. And often there can be features of depression, and also chronic inactivity, like having completely given up walks or jogs or going to the gym or exercising or yoga. So what's important is initially we need to really notice if these are the features that are dominating our everyday life. If so, really to pay attention to it. Then what is that we can do? Obviously, most of us feel that when things like this happen, that we have lost control, that we have lost control on our life. And in fact, wanting to control everything is often the cause of stress. As we know, with the pandemic, COVID, that how, as the situation continued, there was greater amounts of stress and anxiety because we lost control on our lives. And this need for humans to really have that sense of control is so critical for us to remain certain and not to be stressed. However, there is a slight or actually a major difference between wanting to have control, to controlling. In fact, when from the need for control becomes obsessively controlling behavior, that becomes the cause of stress. And in fact, in Ayurveda and yoga and also wise people, they say that Life is a process of letting go. The ability to let go, the ability to surrender, the ability to adapt to the changes around us is the only way how we can manage our stress or even remain stress-free.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Ayurveda says that body adapts to needs and does not impose control. The body's ability to respond naturally, spontaneously, and appropriately is what leads to equilibrium. There is a Sanskrit term for how our body maintains this homeostasis or equilibrium. Despite all competing forces and circumstances, it's called samatva. Sama in Sanskrit is equal. Samatva is that state of equilibrium. And this usually is a natural ability that our body and mind has. But when we try and influence it, try and control it, that's when things can go wrong. Of course, we need to take the right decisions to put the right things to our into our body, like food, and put our body into right use, like exercising, put our mind into right use by engaging with meaningful tasks. But controlling all of these can also lead to excessive stress. So this is where, you know, certain everyday practices will greatly help. For instance, moving our body and daily routine. See, stress is usually an indication of how we feel trapped. Trapped in a situation, trapped in a circumstance, trapped in a certain mindset. And often you'll notice that, you know, when you are irritated, when you are agitated, the moment you leave that space and walk out of that space elsewhere. Often this happens if I'm excessively worrying, if I'm excessively stressed or sometimes irritated. I leave my flat and then go out for a walk. And just the stepping out, going for a walk, just for about 10, 15 minutes, and then coming back, completely shifts the energy. It's amazing how we allow ourselves to liberate ourselves from this sensation of being trapped can shift things and tell something about us, which has the ability to heal, to realign. Therefore, movement is very important. And, you know, it doesn't have to be excessively difficult, challenging movement, such as extreme gym activities or extreme functional exercises or extreme outdoor activities or cycling for hundreds of miles or taking a marathon. Yes, they're all good if you have the capacity, but when you're feeling stressed, just doing few stretches, doing a few sun salutations can be so helpful. And but to remember that when I'm stressed, it's important to move a little bit is what becomes the most difficult part. And applying oil to our body, I have found this Ayurvedic tradition very helpful. When let's say I have worked excessively, let's say I don't feel that I have rested enough, even if I have rested for 7 to 8 hours sleep, and yet I feel not energized, then all that I do is I go for my Ayurvedic oil. Of course, you know, you can use pure sesame oil, and you can use pure sesame oil with few essential oils, or you can buy a good Ayurvedic oil you just have to warm it up a little bit, and then you take a few drops of that in your palm, and then you start pouring some of that onto your scalp and gently apply this oil onto your scalp. Run your finger through the hair and then loosen the scalp. Then apply oil onto your forehead and then to your eyebrows, around your eyes. Be careful that the oil does not get into your eyes, as it can irritate and cause itching and inflammation. Then on the bridge of your nose, your cheeks, upper lip, lower lip, your chin, and gently massaging the oil to your ears, your lobes, and your throat, the back of your neck. Then your upper chest, circular movement around your shoulders, top of your chest, circular movement, your abdomen, and reach as much to the back as possible. It gives you a very good shoulder stretch. And then take your hands further down onto your lower back, to your buttocks, the hips, the front of your thighs and back of your thigh. Divide your thigh into four parts, the front, back, the sides, the inside and outside. Apply oil, and then to your knees, and then to your calf muscles, front of your legs, your ankles, and nicely massage your feet and each of your toes, the soles of your feet. By this time, you have done a lot of good movement. You have come in contact with your body. You are touching your body. And you are using this warm oil, which is very nourishing and relaxing to your nervous system. And then you can stay for about 5 or 10 minutes if it is not too cold, like as in summer. And then have a warm shower. When you have this warm shower, after application of oil, you feel absolutely rejuvenated. And you know, when you have oil application and warm shower, you will have nice hunger, nice appetite, and the chances of craving will also reduce. So these are some very simple traditions or practices from the ancient wisdom of Ayurveda, which we can apply anytime. Who wouldn't like to indulge in applying a little bit of oil, and then massaging our body, and then having a warm shower? It's very, very relaxing and healing. And at the same time, it can really take away all the stress that we might be experiencing due to various factors in our daily life. So certainly, you know, connecting to yourself is a very important way of managing stress. What's the other Ayurvedic practice, which may sound very weird, but it's not necessarily for stress management, but it's about self-awareness. All acts of self-awareness will give us a sense of control and sense of meaning about our own health and our own body. It's really about tongue scraping. I'm sure you know, you may have come across these tongue scrapers. You know, it is made of usually copper, sometimes stainless steel or even silver. And I use copper or a silver tongue scraper. I even supply silver tongue scrapers to my patients. It lasts for years. Basically, you just use this tongue scraper, which will like an L shape or like a U-shape, let's say. And then you put it at the back of your tongue, not too far back that you start gagging, but just enough. And then gently scrape off the coating on the tongue. And it can be a few times and then you spit it out. This is a very good way to connect with yourself. You know, like we all have this practice of brushing our teeth, but why not also gently cleanse our tongue? And this tongue cleansing will help in getting rid of that excess coat on the tongue. And when you are eating, you're not pushing all the bacteria back into your system. So it also helps with your gut health, and your gut would thank you for not pushing back all this gunk back into the system. And you will start to notice a sense of a refreshed feeling in your mouth, better taste, and it also kind of many times reduces cravings as well. And the other practice that I would suggest is really drinking water when you wake up in the morning. I'd like to share an Ayurvedic practice, but you have to do this Ayurvedic practice probably more carefully, because the traditional Ayurvedic practice is to drink water which has been kept in a copper container, like a copper mug or a copper jug. But the problem is, if you don't maintain your copper cup or copper jug properly, it actually can be toxic. You know, we just need this copper mug for ionizing water. So like if you take a copper cup and it's nicely washed, there's absolutely no oxidation, as you'll see, just have a copper cup somewhere in the corner of the kitchen or kitchen bench, and you'll see that over a period of time, you'll start to see this green coloration. And that's oxidation of copper. And if you add water to that and drink, absolutely, that's toxic. On the other hand, if you maintain your copper cup very clean and not oxidized, I'll tell you a method that you can use, which is basically cleaning it with tamarind. You know, you can get tamarind from any of the Asian shops. And tamarind is a fruit which has this acid, much like in lemon, how lemon has the citric acid, which is very good at cleaning. This tamarind is a fruit, and the pulp of this tamarind fruit, you can get it as tamarind, de-seeded or with seeds. And it's highly fibrous. In fact, you know, this is used very commonly in cooking, particularly in South India. It's used on an everyday basis, a great source of fiber. It's very good for the gut. And this tamarind, you just kind of soak it in a little bit of water and scrub your copper cup with this tamarind nicely. It polishes it like it polishes. The best polish for copper would be tamarind, because it takes all oxidized particles, and then you just wash it, you dry it, and then in this really nicely polished tamarind cup, you add water at night and you let it sit overnight, and then in the morning you drink this water. It's ionized copper, which is very good in for elimination, for encouraging our own body's detoxification. So having this ionized water from copper cup can be a great practice. But again, be very careful that you're not exposing yourself to copper toxicity by actually not maintaining your copper cup very well. If you have any kind of fears about it, then just drink normal water. And, you know, sometimes it's also very helpful to have a teaspoon or 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar with water and to have it in the morning. And of course, if you have any acidity or digestive issues, you would have to really be talking to your healthcare provider to see whether to use apple cider vinegar or not in the morning. But drinking water, keeping yourself hydrated, is very important. And also, you know, to use herbs. natural herbs that we get, you know, like mint, coriander, basil, and, you know, all of these green herbs, they have so much of chlorophyll in them. And in fact, you know, adding some of these into your water, infusing them with these herbs will not only give good flavor, but you're also getting that chlorophyll. I mean, in fact, hydrating yourself, detoxifying yourself with these are some of the methods of how you can actually encourage your body to become more body aware, to give your body the right things so that you start to feel better about looking after your body, and then you can be stress-free. And as I mentioned, you know, get into practices like yoga nidra, which is what I just mentioned. You have to go and learn yoga nidra. If not yoga nidra, why don't you do a guided relaxation or like auto-suggestions and to relax? You know, this is even when you just get out of your bed in the morning, instead of on the bed, if you can just lie on the couch or maybe on a mat or on the carpet and practice this guided relaxation, that will be a good way to keep your body in a state where it is not stressed. Breathing, of course, is very, very helpful. So I would always say that, you know, respiratory system is the only system, you know, which is both voluntary and involuntary. Like if you don't pay attention to your breathing, you're still breathing. But when you pay attention to your breath, you actually can influence many physiological processes, like bringing your heart rate down and increasing your oxygenation. The best thing, even if you haven't learned a specific breathing technique or a pranayama, you know, I, in my life, have learned Buteyko, I've learned different types of pranayama in yoga, and they all help. But a simple technique would be, really, what I suggest to my patients is just take your attention to your breath at the level of your abdomen and just watch how your abdomen moves in relation to your breathing. As you inhale, the abdomen expands. As you exhale, it collapses. And without manipulating your breath, just notice the movement of your abdomen. Often I say that don't even take your attention to your chest when you breathe, because if you take your attention to your chest, what I've noticed is we start to manipulate our breath. And we may breathe superficially. And we may not really help in proper contraction and relaxation of our diaphragm, which is so important to fill all the lobes of our lungs. If we are very shallow breathers, then we don't really, or we are not filling the lower lobes, or we are not emptying the carbon dioxide completely. Therefore, exhalation is very important. Longer the exhalation, the better you are emptying your lungs, therefore there is more room for fresh air to enter in and for better oxygenation. So just by paying attention to your breath. So overall, when we start to think that, you know, our mind and body are not two separate entities, and whatever you do in terms of healthy eating, healthy practices to your body can have an effect on your mind, we start to see that stress management becomes a lot more practical, and also you'll start to see the benefits. I hope some of these techniques are useful. They're very simple. You always can practice. And thank you once again for listening to Are You Well? And I hope to connect with you again with more of the wisdom tips from Ayurveda to apply to our modern day life. Thank you.